Robinhood Radio presents Your Health with osteopathic physician Dr. Kim Tripp, a show presented monthly on Robinhood Radio, discussing the challenges faced and the solutions that are available for keeping vital health and well-being throughout our lives. And now, here's Dr. Tripp.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp, osteopathic physician. This is the health show created to bring you vital information and discussion of all kinds of health issues on your mind and in your life from the unique perspective of traditional osteopathic medicine. So first, let's clarify what osteopathic medicine means, as we always do for our new listeners. Osteopathic medicine is practiced by fully licensed physicians in the United States with a DO degree, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. Our practice is based on the essential relationship in all living things between structure and function. In other words, the natural interdependence between anatomy and physiology, or that between the physics of the body and its chemistry. As osteopathic physicians, we use our comprehensive and precisely detailed knowledge of anatomy and physiology to promote health and healing in our patients. We work gently with our hands to help your body restore optimal function based on optimal structure. Our medical specialty is therefore called osteopathic manual medicine. We receive uniquely in-depth training in anatomy and physiology and their relationship within your body in the context of a full physician's medical training. Only U.S.-trained osteopaths are fully licensed physicians and have all of the current medical pharmacopoeia, nutritional science, and full medical training at our disposal. This means that your individual treatment may include a wide range of approaches, but it will always be founded on our gentle, hands-on work. We practice from the unique perspective of first looking for the health in our patients, rather than merely finding illness and disease. Our practice has been especially effective for, but it's not limited to, musculoskeletal and other structural issues, as well as chronic headache, gastrointestinal problems, post-concussive syndrome, sleep disturbance, allergies, and many other problems. We work together with you, the patient, to help you build health and vitality in your body, mind, and spirit as the solution for health problems, rather than only treating the disease symptoms. So in the radio show here, we tackle health issues from this point of view. What can we do to help you build your health and vitality in order to prevent and heal injuries and disease? And we do that by giving you some basic information about the problem to help you understand what's happening, as well as offer solutions and guidance for helping yourself to heal and stay healthy based on our clinical experience with patients in our practice. Before we get started on today's topic, I'll remind you again that you can listen to all of our prior Your Health shows online at your convenience by going to Robinhood Radio's website, then the on-demand section, then scroll down and select the Your Health shows, then you can click the individual show by topic. It's a fantastic advantage to the world of radio on demand. Today, we are going to complete, for now, our exploration of that large, comprehensive, and complicated gastrointestinal system and its common problems. In the past shows on this multi-organ system, we reviewed the basic anatomy, physiology, and functional roles of all the organs and other systems involved with normal digestion, as well as giving an overview of the fascinating gut microflora, the friendly bacteria that live in our guts and help with so many aspects of our health. We also started our exploration of common GI problems with a generalized list of what problems can develop throughout the system, followed by a more detailed discussion of peptic ulcers, hiatal hernia, GERD, and other issues. You'll likely want to listen to the earlier shows to have all that material in mind before moving on to the problems discussed today. I do want to again review the basic symptoms of GI problems today. The first sign of problems in the digestive tract can include one or more of the following symptoms: belly pain, swallowing problems, heartburn or acid reflux, nausea and/or vomiting, bloating, constipation or diarrhea, red blood in the stool from bleeding in the colon or rectum, black tarry stools, which is generally indicative of bleeding in the upper GI system, like the stomach, incontinence of the bowel, and or unintended weight gain or loss. These symptoms can each be associated with one or more of the many potential GI problems, from minor to life-threatening, which is why it's so very important to have any new gut symptoms evaluated right away by a physician, and in some cases by a physician who is also a gastrointestinal specialist. They're called gastroenterologists. Today, we're going to finish up with a discussion of gallbladder health issues and a little bit on food sensitivities and allergies, such as celiac disease and lactose intolerance. Let's start with the gallbladder. The gallbladder is an aptly named small collecting sac for bile, which is produced by the liver and is used to help digest fats. Gall is an old word for bile, and the word bladder means a little sac, which is why we also have a so-called urinary bladder, although the urinary bladder is much larger than the gallbladder because we make a lot more urine than bile. The gallbladder is tucked up against the lobes of the liver, where it stores and concentrates the bile made by the liver. It has a storage capacity of about 40 to 70 milliliters, which is about 3 to 5 tablespoons. And by reabsorption of water, salts, and electrolytes through the gallbladder mucosa, that bile becomes more concentrated than it was in the liver, as much as 10 times more concentrated. Bile is a yellowish-brown fluid composed of water, bile salts, fatty acids, cholesterol, lecithin, bilirubin, and mucus. The liver makes about 1 quart of bile daily, and whatever isn't sent directly to the duodenum of the small intestine to emulsify fats is diverted to the gallbladder and stored until needed. When fat from a meal reaches the duodenum, cholecystokinin and secretin are secreted into the circulation, which, when they reach the gallbladder, cause it to contract. This contraction, plus peristalsis in the small intestine, causes the gallbladder's opening valve, which is called the sphincter of Oddi, one of the coolest names in anatomy, to relax, and then the bile can flow into the duodenum. With a high-fat meal, the gallbladder can completely empty within 1 hour. The liver, gallbladder, and associated complex duct system that delivers bile from the liver to the gallbladder and duodenum, and then from the gallbladder to the duodenum, is called the biliary tree or biliary tract or biliary system. The biliary system intersects and interacts with the duct system from the pancreas that delivers pancreatic digestive fluids to the duodenum as well, which has, of course, received the partially digested contents of the stomach for further digestion and processing through the small intestine. Obstruction from gallstones or tumors or cysts or infection in any part of this system can cause inflammation and colicky or constant pain, especially after meals, as well as maldigestion, nausea, and or vomiting, all depending on the severity and specific location of the obstruction or infection. Some problems associated with the gallbladder are gallstones and gallbladder disease caused by infection or malignancy. Gallbladder pain is caused by biliary colic, gallstones, cholecystitis, which means infection or inflammation of the gallbladder, pancreatitis, which is infection or inflammation of the pancreas, and cholangitis, which is infection or inflammation anywhere in the biliary system. Gallstones are solidified particles of substances in the bile. They are made of a combination of bile salts, cholesterol, and bilirubin. Gallstones can be as small as a grain of sand or as large as a golf ball. Gallstones can cause obstruction in the gallbladder and the associated duct system. Depending on exactly where the obstruction is, it can cause one or more diverse problems: gallbladder obstruction, biliary tree obstruction, which can lead to jaundice, and pancreatic duct obstruction, which can lead to pancreatitis. Gallstones can block the gallbladder ducts so that bile cannot reach the small intestine as effectively, which may prevent the gallbladder from doing its job and can lead to maldigestion and other gallbladder diseases. Most gallstones pass through the system on their own, but some may require a minor procedure or even surgery. Diagnosis is made with labs, ultrasound, and/or a HIDA scan. Factors that contribute to the risk of developing gallstones include obesity, routinely eating high-fat or high-cholesterol diets, diabetes, and estrogen-based medications. Women, people over 60, Native Americans, and Mexican Americans are at a higher than average risk for gallstones. Biliary colic gives a steady or intermittent ache or sense of pressure in the upper right abdomen, usually under the right side of the ribs. In some people, that abdominal pain spreads back toward the right shoulder blade in a referred pain pattern. People may also have nausea or vomiting. It happens when something blocks the normal flow of bile from the gallbladder. Recall that under normal circumstances, bile is made in the liver and stored in the gallbladder. When you eat a meal, bile passes from the gallbladder through the cystic duct and the common bile duct into the duodenum of the small intestine, where it mixes with partially digested food from the stomach. Gallstones are the most common reason for biliary colic. If a gallstone blocks either of these ducts, the normal flow of bile into the intestine is disrupted. The muscle cells associated with the bile duct contract vigorously to try to move the stone, causing the pain of biliary colic. A stricture of the bile duct or a tumor also can block bile flow and cause biliary colic. Because symptoms of biliary colic usually are triggered by the digestive system's demand for bile, they are especially common after fatty meals. The symptoms also can occur when a person who has been fasting suddenly breaks the fast and eats a very large meal. Because biliary colic is usually related to gallstones, it can be prevented by controlling the risk factors for gallstones. Some of these risk factors, such as heredity, increasing age, and pregnancy, are a normal part of life. Others, such as obesity and a high-fat diet, are risk factors you can modify through a healthy lifestyle. Women going through menopause who take estrogen in hormone replacement therapy are also more likely to develop gallstones and biliary colic. So what's to be done about biliary colic and gallstones? Surgery is not necessarily the first or best option. If the colic has been relatively mild and intermittent, changing to a low-fat or fat-free diet combined with osteopathic treatment can be an effective and non-invasive way to resolve and prevent further episodes. Osteopathic treatment helps the body pass any stones and restores normal function. If you have repeat and/or worsening episodes, however, it is important to have imaging done, such as ultrasound, to determine the specific location, size, and nature of the obstruction. If the first episode of biliary colic is particularly severe, or if the episodes of colic keep returning and/or worsening, surgery to remove the gallbladder, called a cholecystectomy, usually is recommended. The procedure usually requires a brief stay in the hospital. Some people can even leave the hospital the same day they have their operation. Like any surgery, however, there are risks of complications. If symptoms of biliary colic are persistent in spite of conservative treatment and surgery is contraindicated, there is medication that dissolves gallstones. However, this medication is expensive and it can take months or even years to work. Also, generally only small stones will effectively dissolve. Rarely, medication to dissolve gallstones is combined with a procedure called shockwave lithotripsy, which uses carefully aimed shockwaves to break up the gallstones. However, in many people treated with medication or lithotripsy, gallstones tend to form again within a few years because the root cause of their formation has not been addressed. If you do really need surgery to remove the gallbladder, you should know that the gallbladder is not absolutely necessary for human survival because bile can reach the small intestine without first collecting in the gallbladder sac. But without the gallbladder, there is no concentrated storage reservoir for dealing with fatty meals, and fat digestion can be compromised or incomplete in the absence of a gallbladder. So it's beneficial to keep to a low-fat diet. I do want to remind you that you always need immediate medical attention whenever you have severe abdominal pain, with or without nausea and vomiting. If you have symptoms of biliary colic and you suddenly develop a fever and shaking chills, this may signal a gallbladder infection. So call to get medical attention right away. All right, so let's switch gears here for a few minutes and briefly address the rather enormous topic of food sensitivities and allergies. Food sensitivities and allergies run a spectrum from mild discomfort to digestive intolerance to life-threatening anaphylactic reactions requiring immediate emergency care and intubation to prevent asphyxiation. Frank's severe allergies to shellfish, nuts, fruit, or other foods can land children and adults in the hospital after a first post-allergic exposure. These allergies can come on gradually and cumulatively, such that there is an exposure that surpasses the body's threshold to handle the reaction, and then severe rashes, vomiting, swelling of the face, throat, tongue, and/or extremities can follow. Unfortunately, it's difficult to predict when such a cumulative threshold may be passed. So any reaction to certain foods, such as itching, rashes, nausea, mild redness, or swelling of lips and tongue, should be a warning flag to avoid those foods in the future. An allergist physician can sometimes help characterize underlying food allergies before any exposure, but these kinds of allergies can be changeable. So it's best to be aware of any food reactions you have yourself and avoid these foods in the future. Sometimes it's unclear when we're having a food sensitivity. Lactose intolerance, for example, can be difficult to pin down without an elimination diet. Lactose is the sugar found in all dairy products, milk, cream, butter, cheese, yogurt, and kefir. Lactase is the enzyme we produce to break down the lactose. Lactase production often dwindles as we age and may be absent in many people. If we are lactose intolerant and eat dairy anyway, that can lead to bloating, cramping, constipation, and/or diarrhea, and ultimately chronic inflammation of the gut, which can lead to many other GI problems. If you suspect lactose intolerance in yourself, work with your physician to give yourself a totally dairy-free diet for 2 to 3 weeks and see if your symptoms resolve. It's really worth it. Celiac disease is another example of a food reactivity. Celiac disease is a frank autoimmune reaction to the gluten protein found in wheat and all of the wheat varieties, such as spelt or kashi. It's also found in rye and barley. When people with celiac disease eat gluten, their body mounts an immune response that attacks the small intestine. These attacks lead to damage on the villi, which are the small finger-like projections that line the small intestine and are very important for nutrient absorption. When the villi get damaged, nutrients cannot be absorbed properly into the body. Persistent ingestion of gluten with celiac disease causes serious damage to the intestines and serious malnutrition. There is a blood test to help determine if you have celiac disease. Celiac disease is generally hereditary, meaning that it runs in families. People with a first-degree relative with celiac disease, like a parent, child, or sibling, have a 1 in 10 risk of developing celiac disease, and it appears to be more common in people of Northern European ethnicities, but it's not necessarily restricted to these people. It's crucial to be evaluated for potential celiac disease if you experience bloating, cramping, pain, fatigue, constipation, and/or diarrhea after eating any gluten-containing food. That said, you may have a gluten sensitivity that is not an autoimmune reaction and is therefore not Frank's celiac disease. If that is the case, it will be beneficial for you to avoid gluten in your diet in any case. There are a number of opinions about the root causes of non-celiac disease gluten sensitivity, including pervasive pesticide residues on grains, a high gluten level in modern varieties of wheat, and underlying GI inflammation due to a high sugar diet or other inflammation-promoting factors that makes the gut generally more reactive. In any case, if you persistently react negatively to any particular food, it's important to work with a physician to determine the specific food content that's causing the reaction and the reason for the reaction itself. For example, persistently eating dairy in the context of having lactose intolerance can lead to developing sensitivities to other foods due to the chronic inflammation in the intestines. After a period of a dairy-free diet, you may be able to resume eating those other foods to which you had developed the secondary sensitivity. Restoring normal gut function after discovering a food allergy or sensitivity involves significant dietary changes, as well as restoring a normal, balanced gut flora and autonomic nervous system regulation of the gut, which is true when recovering from any gastrointestinal health issue. Which brings me back to osteopathy and to the close of today's show here with a reminder that a good osteopathic physician who is a specialist in osteopathic manual medicine can be especially helpful for gastrointestinal issues of all kinds. Working gently with our hands with the involved organs, nerves, vasculature, fascias, capsules, and associated tissues to release restrictions in the physical tissues of the gut, organs, diaphragm, and blood and lymphatic flow, as well as to help balance the autonomic nervous system function based on anatomical detail and to help with nutritional issues and support for whatever procedures you may be going through. Recall that all the gastrointestinal tract is a complex physical entity with connections between all the parts that need to be open, flexible, and moving freely with excellent neural conduction from the cranial nerves, optimal arterial and venous blood flow, and lymphatic drainage to remain healthy, vital, and functioning normally. Well, here we are at the end of the show again. Thank you so much for your attention to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp. Remember, you can email your comments and suggestions for topics to yourhealth@robinhoodradio.com. If you have a health issue yourself and would like to find out about how we might be able to help you in our practice of traditional osteopathy, we are at our offices in Sharon, Connecticut, Dr. Kim Tripp and Dr. Andrew Goldman, Goldman Tripp, Osteopathic Healthcare, 860-364-5990, Monday to Friday, 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. with evening hours Wednesdays and Fridays, or on the web at www.goldmantripp.net. Meanwhile, I'll be looking forward to being with you next time, every other Friday at 12:30 and Sundays at 5:30. Take care of yourself, enjoy your health, and thank you for listening.